Welcome again to this meeting. Yeah, we're having two agenda items in for this meeting today. Yeah, I'm happy to report to you that we are blessed today. The DG or the department, the Assam amendment that we're going to effect into this bill, and based on the discussions that we had with members of the executive and some people relevant to this this legislation, this bill. Maybe before I pronounce myself to the those particular changes, I think I must allow Lawrence, Sarel, Madame Boisa, Dr. Jacob, and who else? I want to hear their voices before I find myself, because I suspect they also have their own bilateral somewhere, some discussions, just to check if you reached some agreement or not, Lawrence. And if not, tell me so that we assist you. I'm good at that, assisting people. When I was going about the matchmaker, if you propose to a girl and you fail, they were coming to me. I know how to deal with those kind of things. Okay. Lawrence.
Thank you, Chair. I think you summed it up very nicely. I don't think I have anything to add, but to say that with your permission, we would like a bit of time to go and draft the amendments, and we can come back to you and try and facilitate and get the bill finalised as soon as possible. So we do need a little bit of time just to go and sit down. And I think what we would like to do is, in the process of drafting, we'd like to sit with some of the other role players and just clear up any uncertainties that there may still be. But I think you summed it up. That's what we need to do. If you want me to go into details on the areas, but
we know. Well, the same issues that you raised, and I think there are some agreements, as I said. I was right informed that for some discussions that took place, and they really are accommodating all our concerns. Before I come to you, Honorable Leroux, Sarah, do you want to say something?
Chairperson, nothing further to add. I believe you have summed it up as long as it's set, and we'll abide by how you're going to direct us to continue with this bill.
So, Madam Wood?
Nothing to add. Thank you, Chairperson.
Flip? Thank you, Chair. If I was a judge, I would say I concur. And any assistance that we can provide from our side, we will gladly do so. Thank you, Chair.
Before I allow Honorable Leroux to address me on this one, Lauren, how much time do you need for you to draft those particular those few changes?
Chair, may I answer that question with a question? I'd like, if you could give us an idea of when you'd like it ready, we can try and work in your time. And if I was thinking,
if you ask me, Lawrence, I'm telling you, I'll put a serious bet on you, but just indicate how much time you want so that I can.
I wonder if we could early next week sometime. Would that be too far? Or did you have something in mind that was a bit earlier, Chair?
Yeah, it's just that it's scheduled for plenary on the 20th. So that's the only snack. I think next week it might be too late. Because I trust you, and all the time you've been so good to me all these years when you were briefing me about the bills. So I don't know what time, why this time can't you do it quickly?
So we can watch, if we'll try and do it then by Friday, if that's, or is that also too late?
I'm taking credit to remember this, that even though the Section 75, that's a three-day rule. I wanted to try to accommodate it. But let's talk about it. I know the advocate man is here for the annual report, but I still want to hear his voice on this one after we clear this mess. I don't want him to be involved in this administrative things in my committee, but I want to hear his voice about that particular item. But I don't know. If I can look at that, they give you a bonus, you go and work on this thing from now on until whenever.
As I said, you know, we can try. I'm just not going to be available tomorrow. But we can make a plan. That's if you feel that we need to, if we have to get it done by tomorrow, then we will do that.
I know it's an inconvenience to you, but if it was possible, I'll say tomorrow afternoon, not later than 3, you know, I'll be so much ready because I was going to try to. We're meeting tomorrow, but the other class will be out. I can try to squeeze this one and I can revise my point because it's only. We might need not more than 10 minutes to do this thing. Even 5 minutes will be, but.
Well, if that's going to have to be, then we'll have to make a plan too. We'll try and sort something out by then.
Advocate Milan, can I have a bite on this one before we get to the second item?
The CFO tells me there is a budget if they need to stay overnight.
Wonderful. I know it will be like that, Joe. That's ever ready for a comrade. Oh, yeah. On that note, can I... Oh, yeah, let me recognize the Honorable Leroux before I pronounce the decision of this committee.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I don't think all the members of the committee are informed as to what negotiations took place and what are they actually going to draft. And I think it's just fair if you let us in on the secret, let us just hear what amendments are planned. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's an honest request. Now, the same issues, Honorable Leroux. The question of the roaming stuff, there's some agreement on that one. The question of the handset registration, there's agreement on that one. The question of the time frame, there's an agreement on that one. I mean, those were the serious hurdles and some few minor issues that I think we've agreed on. But I want to spill the beans as to the kind of agreement, but I can see that the concerns as the committee has been accommodated. But I'm not going to say more, well, please, do allow me not to say anything more than this. Thank you very much. Honorable Museki, hello, Tapsi.
No, I just want to... I'm not on what you raised, Chairperson. I just want to also... The draft has to take into consideration the short title and commencement, the commencement. It says the 6th year of June, 2006. I think we have always been raising these matters to say that the prescription for the president, but beside that, the date has passed. But the new dimension to that is to check if the department itself, if that date, if the president was to ascend tomorrow or next week, will the department be in a position to implement this immediate effect? Because that is extremely important. You don't assess something that will not be implemented within the prescribed time frame that creates problems. I just want to check if that can also be revisited and if the department is ready in essence.
Okay, yeah, I think they can live with that. Let's But the concerns you are raising, the first part, that's where I agree with you. So the question of the short title always is a concern to the committee. I think they'll go in and work in that one. Because if you can remember, when we're dealing with the sexual offenses, we came with a compromise position to have it with some installments. Implementation thereof was in installment. I think we might have some similar arrangement. But I think let's leave it to Lawrence and them they'll come to us and then, yeah. On that note, I forgot to recognize our service providers. I can see they're here. I wish we can keep them for the whole week here. Yeah, with the commission colleagues, can I say we are done with this particular item? Let's allow the department to come and make those necessary changes. Then, where is the venue tomorrow afternoon? Where are we? I know. Yeah, Lawrence, Chris will communicate with you of the exact venue and the time thereof. Because as I said, we don't need more than 10 minutes on this bill, because those hurdles have been addressed. It's only a few issues. Yeah, if there's nothing from your side, Dr. Jacobs and Lawrence and the team, yeah, that's good. Then your DG wants to talk to us. And maybe you need your support. If it's not just you, must go and draft something else. I'm not going to say, you know, you sit here, but your boss is here, you can't leave, him alone. But I think he's man enough, he'll take care of himself and his team. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think if I'm going to ask if I can be excused, and I hope it's not seen as that I'm deserting my DG, but I'm really going to go and start working on that. On the amendments.
Moi. Thanks very much, sir. On that note, until we meet tomorrow in this particular for this particular item. Colleagues, as I said, we are now going to get the annual report from the Department of Justice, led by Advocate Melania, the DG. Without any waste of time, DG, these are members of this committee. I'll check if the advocate is ready. I can hand over to you, but if you take more time, I can go to a commercial break, then when we come back, if we'll be ready, then we can start. Colleagues, Honorable Shitega wants to see the Minister of LG, but they're supposed to be here. The person who...
A long one, and because of time, Mr. Chair, I will propose that I'd be allowed to just maybe highlight the most important issues and jump certain slides so that maybe honourable members will have a chance to ask more questions based on the annual report. Chair, the presentation will cover the strategic overview, program performance, you know, specifically how we performed on a number of areas. Financial performance, which I'm sure honourable members would be interested in, our situation with human resources, and some of the challenges that we face. With respect to the strategic overview, if I can remind the honourable members that there are three key strategic goals of the department. It's enhancing access to justice for all, enhancing organisational efficiency, and transforming justice, state and society. So everything that really the department does and we'll be doing over the MCSF period is going to be focused on those three. So we measure each and every activity according to its contribution to any one or a combination of those three strategic goals. Our allocation of resources obviously follows that particular trend as well. With respect to infrastructure, our budgets of about 308 million was spent on quite a number of areas. And again, access to infrastructure
is our contribution to the goal of access to justice and transformation of society and state. Access to justice in the sense that we want to make sure that you know, the people in South Africa have access to court infrastructure so that they can then obviously enforce their rights and so forth. In some communities, the courts are so far away that people do not think about seeking to enforce their rights because it becomes a mammoth task to even think about going to a physical infrastructure because of its proximity to that particular community. So our program around infrastructure investment seeks to bring the courts closer to the people. In that respect, we spent about 60 million just upgrading existing infrastructure as part of our repair and maintenance program, just keeping the courts in the appropriate conditions for use by the people. And then we had six courts where we opened new buildings or will be opening new buildings. So those are courts really where currently there aren't courts in those communities. So those are courts that have been built and completed during this particular financial period. Then in other existing courts, we add additional accommodation that may be required, whether it's additional courtrooms or additional administrative facilities. We do make those determinations and therefore do accordingly. With respect to the mobile courts, these are areas where, in one of the ISMBs that the minister and other ministers attend, when we get the feedback from those ISMBs, we pick up a number of useful points that impact on our work. One of the issues that we picked up is that many communities, especially in the small towns or in the rural communities, they've raised concerns about some of the court cases that take place in correctional facilities and others that take place in police stations. So we still have those facilities where they have a court and therefore a matter takes place at a police station or a correctional facility. The result being when people see this happen, they do question whether or not there is in fact justice under those circumstances. Because in their minds and because of lack of understanding of how the system works, when they see a magistrate and a police official and a prosecutor working out of a police station, they tend to believe that there may be possible collusion. So it undermines justice to have those types of environments continuing in the various areas of the country, such that it erodes the confidence that people may have in the system. So the minister instructed us to make sure that those situations are stopped. So we did a determination to find out how far and how many areas in the country do we still have these situations happen, and we identified a number of them. So those 35 mobile courts relate to a situation where we stop operating a court out of a correctional service facility, out of a police station, but adjacent to it, we put a mobile facility so that that runs independently, and we make sure that there's a clear separation between a police station and the mobile court, or between a correctional facility and the mobile court, so that people can really see that there is justice being done. It's not so much that really there is collusion, but the perception on people's minds is something we have to address. So some of those mobile courts were deployed in those particular communities. With respect to court security, which is part of our infrastructure, we spent money on those activities. Chair, there's quite a large number of courts in the country that don't have security infrastructure. The only security that we're able to provide is maybe guards at the main entrance of a particular court. But inside the court, some of the courts are big. We're not able to afford to have a lot of security there because of budget constraints. But every financial year, we try and increase the level of security that we can provide. And currently, we try to put as much as possible of the X-ray machines and walk-through metal detectors. And in some cases, if we are lucky, we're able to put closed-circuit televisions. Our intention, Chair, and our hope is that we can use more of the closed-circuit televisions because you then use fewer warm bodies to do the monitoring of security, but you use a closed-circuit television, and then that can be linked to police stations where appropriate and where the facility functions. So really, the issue of security remains important, and we try to accommodate it in many ways possible. Cash in transit, the last bullet point there, talks to the money for maintenance, where people come to court and they pay their maintenance money, and we pay it out at the court. So because money is always in circulation in many of our courts, and you can't keep it overnight, somebody has to come and collect it. So cash in transit does that. I think the important issue around this point here is whether or not this should really continue to be an activity of the department. So strategically, it's something that has to be looked at, because really we felt that it's not the core business of a department to be dealing with cash handling. That's a banking service, and the Department of Justice is not performing banking service. There are a number of awareness programs on page 6 here that we've also put in place to try and make sure that we provide access to justice and that we transform. There are a number of awareness programs on Equality Court and the Victim Charter, in terms of which we communicate information about the existence of Equality Court and also how the communities can enforce their rights and what they are entitled to when they visit police stations or healthcare facilities or the courts when they have been victims of crime. There's a manner in which they are supposed to be treated and assisted so that there is no secondary victimization to them. We therefore have a charter in terms of which quite a large number of services have to be provided at different levels. The victim charter will be launched with a 5-year plan on the 21st of this month. Chair, the Deputy President of the Republic will be presiding over that launch. And really, it is a cluster program which provides information for communities on what to expect when they have been victims of crime. The third one, Operation Isondo, is the continued maintenance program in terms of which we try and make sure that money held on behalf of third parties are paid as quickly as possible in an efficient manner, as aforesaid. On page 7, we deal with a couple of public education and communication information that we've made available on a number of topics to try and just ensure that the public remains informed about the issues affecting justice, and also to have the department receive input from the public. In some cases, unfortunately, this input comes by way of complaints about the quality of services or the quality of the conditions. But yes, we have to deal with all of those as a department, and we have to issue responses, clarify things here and there. So page 7 really deals with the extent of the work on the communication side that we have to make sure we do to, again, ensure that there's access to justice by way of providing the necessary information, and that there's transformation by way, again, of providing people with information about how to enforce their rights or to receive services, as it were. On page 8, these issues deal with the modernization program of the department. And this is really a big program of the department, because what it does is it modernizes the department. It seeks to modernize the department so that we can move away from manual systems, but instead we move to electronic systems, because use of electronic systems enable us to be much more efficient and to give more thorough reports. Obviously, reports depend on what you put into the computer, what you feed into the computer, but the advantage is that one will be able to get information from anywhere. Just to highlight the magnitude of this thing, a couple of years ago, I think 3-4 years ago, although there were computers in many of the courts, they were really connected in such a way that only a person in that court would use it. So it was always difficult to send emails to colleagues in other parts of the country on a court-to-court basis, because the network wasn't there. We hadn't built the infrastructure to enable that type of communication. So part of the modernization was therefore to build that communication so that courts can talk to each other, for want of a better expression. If I want to send an email working out of Khayelitsha Court to somebody in Niger, it's now possible to do that, whereas previously it was not really possible, because the court infrastructure, the justice court infrastructure, was not integrated. It was not talking to each other. We could work on a computer at a specific location, but we couldn't communicate, let alone have a system that seeks to address certain specific challenges of service delivery. But just to send an email, it was always difficult. People had to use telephone. So we had to really come up with a mechanism in terms of which we modernize the way justice does its work. So part of this, therefore, included putting a platform, a network, on the ground, almost the groundwork for the department, so that it is capable to start putting systems. As soon as we finish doing that, We then started putting specific systems to address a number of issues. The e-scheduler system, which has not been rolled out really to all of the courts, at the time of preparing the report, Chair, it was about 436 courts. But it's now all of the courts that it's been rolled out at. And what it does is that it enables the departments to capture electronically all charge sheets, all matters that appear in court. We capture them electronically on a charge sheet. It also enables us to capture electronically all of the statements that go with a particular document so that we can store them electronically. That work is ongoing because we've had to buy scanners so that you can scan it in and save these things electronically. The advantage of this, obviously, Chair, is that if the hard physical copy gets lost, there's an electronic version that can be printed. So what we're trying to resolve is an environment where matters don't proceed because the hard copy is either missing or stolen or for some reason it just is not available or any part thereof. If all of that information is captured early enough, it should be possible to just stand down the matter for a few minutes to allow printing to take place and then the matter can proceed. So the e-scheduler really keeps docket information electronically saved. And as I said, this was not going to be possible without having a back office network program that saves this information. But as we do more and more of this, it does put pressure on the network. And the network gets slower as more information goes in. So the e-scheduler system deals with it. But it also primarily enables the presiding officers to schedule cases electronically. So when they normally sit with a diary and work by hand, it's possible to use the system to do it by hand so that, the diary is available electronically. So part of the ordinary challenges, I suppose, with electronic systems is user issues. In other words, the more people engage with the system, they try and use the system, the more the system is usable. What we have done as a department is create the capability for those that are interested in it. So case flow management and scheduling of cases, in many jurisdictions, judicial officers are now using the e-scheduler to schedule them with the prosecutors. The scanning solution I've spoken to, it talks to e-scheduler, so the two go together. We are hoping to purchase more scanners so that we have at least one scanner per court or two scanners per court, especially those courts with high volumes of capturing to do, so that information is saved. The last one talks to a video postponement. This was a pilot chain which has been run for at least 2 years or so in the department. It runs very well. What it does is that it enables the court to postpone matters without the accused person having to leave a prison facility. So in other words, at the Westville prison where this pilot is being run, there is a courtroom with a screen and a TV where accused persons go and stand and they are projected directly to a court where they can be seen on screen and matters are postponed without them having to leave a facility. And what it does is that it facilitates speed. It's much quicker to postpone matters because when matters are set down, correctional facilities are able to put people in the order that the cases are scheduled, and then all they do is walk in and matters get postponed. Our intention is to roll this one out. We've checked 22 correctional facilities throughout the country where we can run this system. And those 22 correctional facilities connect us to at least the 50 busiest courts in the country where we can continue to run this. Portsmouth is one of them. Hopefully by the end of the calendar year, Portsmouth Prison will be running this thing, Johannesburg Prison, Pretoria Prison will be running this particular program as well. So really it does reduce security concerns so that your most dangerous of criminals, instead of risking them escaping by driving them to a court from a prison facility, that doesn't have to happen. They can just have their matters postponed directly where they are. The intention in the long run and the long term, Chair, when the legislation allows, and we're working on that amendment now, is that it should be possible to run a trial electronically, an ordinary trial. You should be able to run a trial in the same way that with children who are involved in sexual offences, the video conducting of a trial where the charge doesn't have to be in the same courtroom as the perpetrator. That same scheme can proceed with respect to high profile matters where somebody can really have a trial running out of a correctional facility and again save the problem of flight risk, but also deal with other problems where, for example, a main witness can't be called because that witness is out of town, and cost of bringing that witness can be problematic. What can be arranged is that the person can go to a nearest facility and give evidence by way of video, almost like video conferencing. So currently the law doesn't allow that, but we're hoping to amend the legislation to enable case presentation to be done in that way. But for now, we're using video postponement as a test for this. All of this would not have been possible without necessarily ensuring that the network very is set up and is able to do these things. So that's what we talk to when we talk about modernization of the system. It goes further to page 9. The digital recording system, Chair, what that basically relates to, and it's been done to every court now, no, not every court. I think at the end of September, we had about 40 courts outstanding to roll this program out. What it is, if you recall, Chair, that in a court, you had what was called stenographers, and those are people that would arrive and record matters, and then when the case is finished, they would leave. Those are part-time staff employed by a service provider that was providing the recording facility for that court. What we did is we changed the whole system. When the contracts came to an end, we procured and bought a transcription system from Dimension Data, in terms of which there is a machine that is put, and really all that is done is that it gets switched on from, let's say, 8 o'clock, and it records the whole day, and is set to stop recording at 6 p.m. So during that whole time, it records non-stop. It's a digital recording system. It improves immediately the quality of the recording. You know, it still gives us problems here and there, but we hope that that won't be going on for too long. But it improves the quality of the recording, and it just ensures that we don't need really stenographers anymore. So what we're able to do was to convert the post of stenographers to court clerks, so that you can employ them full time and then use them for other services in the court, including monitoring this. So we're able to do that for about 1,700 or so of those officials. But the recording of court processes is no longer outsourced. It's now done in the department. What we still outsource is the transcription, the conversion of the recorded material into a court record. We hope that with time we will not be doing that as well, and that everything will be done in court. So that's how the digital recording system relates to. The rolling out of basic IT infrastructure, that's the network rollout that I spoke to, just to make sure that every court is not only connected computer-wise, but we're also able to have communication between the various courts. Similar systems are being rolled out in the master's office. So the capturing of administration of the state, where we're currently using manual cards, we're rolling out a system so that it's done electronically. Similarly with the Guardians Fund, where a system has been rolled out in 3 of the 6 offices that are currently applicable. So we're hoping to roll it out in many others. The Justice Deposit Account System, we otherwise call it the JDAS, was rolled out. You recall that there was a program on special assignment where they went to 3 courts where the system wasn't at the time rolled out, and they picked up problems. And we've managed to reach those particular courts, and those problems don't exist to the same extent that they existed at the time. Although they still are there, but we're able to provide a much better service as a department to those communities. So that's modernization. In other areas where we have sought to ensure that there's organizational efficiency, we have sought to increase court personnel. All of these systems, Chair, do depend on people to manage and run so that they work very well. So we spend a lot of time recruiting new officials to make sure that they do this work, from court clerks to court managers to area court managers, just in the different areas where we do work. Page 11 reflects the various recruitments that we've made. On page 12, we talk to the legislative program, where a number of bills, currently some are before this committee, and others are before the portfolio committee. RICA, for example, is before this committee. The South African Judicial Education Institute bill, I think it's before this committee if it's not passed already. Civil Unions bill is gone. So really those are bills that are ready for introduction or are already introduced. The Criminal Law Amendment Bill is there. Judicial Service Commission Amendment Bill is there. So really these are bills that are transformative in nature. They have the effects that we're able to transform society in a number of ways if they are passed, and we hope that they will be passed. Further to this is the review of the criminal justice system. This review of the criminal justice system is complementary to the review that honorable members may have read about in the newspaper, where the
review has been spoken about, where it's been done in partnership with business. It is beginning to implement some of the issues that have been identified in this review. This review talks to really starting the system and putting in place and measures and identifying measures that should be put in place in order to effect certain changes. So some of those measures have been immediate. They've been very straightforward, you know, where we felt that just greater coordination can improve the situation. So for those, we felt that we can implement them immediately without having to wait for the completion of the whole review. So it's a system where we implement as we go already, where we pick up a problem, find a solution. If it's possible to do immediately, we seek to immediately do and move forward. So the review that you've been reading about in the newspaper identified those areas from this review where we believe immediate change can happen. We don't have to wait until the whole review is completed. So those are the issues that it talks to. Video postponement is one of those emergency ones. There's a special program that seeks to create a greater pool of female judicial officers that can appear in the High Court and preside over matters in the High Court. So the majority of them were magistrates that went through this specific program. The realignment of jurisdictions of magistrate courts, what this basically talks to, it talks to as we know, currently the courts are structured according to 366 magisterial districts. Now those magisterial districts have in each one main court. Outside of those magisterial districts or within those magisterial districts, any other court is a branch of the main court. So with the Soweto Magisterial District, sorry, the Johannesburg Magisterial District, the main court is Johannesburg. So a court, any court in Soweto, any court in Alexander, in Randburg, is a branch of the main court. And how the department used to employ officials is that you are employed at the main court. Then you get asked to go work out of a branch court. So those courts don't have posts of their own. Posts are in the main court. That's why there will be 100 magistrates employed at the Johannesburg Magistrate Court, because that's the main court. That's where the posts are. But they will arrive at the Johannesburg Magistrate Court and then they leave and go to Wynberg and go to Randburg and work, because that's where they are assigned. What we propose to do here is to say, Chair, that every court must be a main court in itself. It shouldn't be a branch court of any other court. It should be a main court in itself and it should have its own post and have its own resources. So that's what we propose to do. And we've identified 24 branch courts that should really be proclaimed as main courts. The Protea Court in Soweto, for example, is a branch court of the Johannesburg Court. The workload is such that it should really be a standalone court in itself. So that is what is happening in those. And we are hoping to cover other 66 branch courts and convert them to main courts. Then the 230 periodical courts, those are courts that sit once a month or once a week, where a magistrate assigned to the main court will then arrive on that particular set day and preside over matters. What the periodical court system does is that it informs the community that you'll only get a service here only when this court sits. On any other days, the infrastructure doesn't function. And what we propose to do here, Chair, is that we are going to be providing administrative services. So where a court sits once a week, what we'll do instead on the other days where the court does not sit, the department will provide other services like maintenance, administration of estate. So we are employing full-time officials to make sure that in those areas people can continue to get a service. What we are continuing to argue with the judiciary is that they must allocate magistrates so that those periodical courts sit for longer periods at a time. If possible, they should all sit for every day that is a working day. They should be able to sit. So that's the debate with which we're engaging with the judiciary. And in some areas we're having very good progress, but in others it's difficult to move and make those changes. The legal services sector charter is a charter that seeks to implement changes in the profession. We're hoping that by end of this month the profession will adopt the legal services sector charter so that it can be launched by the profession early in December. Many of the law societies are having their annual general meetings and they are commenting on the charter and giving an indication. There are regulations that were issued that really seek to
take further the legislation that we have passed and that we administer, just for ease of administration purposes. And we reflect them there on page 14. With respect to program performance, starting on page 16, what this really does, it goes from page 16 to... page 24, that deals with the performance of the courts, how the courts have been performing. The first few pages there talk to how the magistrates' courts and high courts have performed on criminal matters, how many matters are investigated, how many reach the trial stage, how many are withdrawn, how many are postponed. Of those that are completed, that reach the trial stage, we have an 86% conviction rate. We have an 86% conviction rate. But of about a million or just over a million cases, at least 700,000 were removed or stuck off the roll. So there's a high number of cases, Chair, that don't make it to trial. Although the matters may go to court, they never make it to trial for a number of reasons, including not sufficiency of evidence, investigations not being completed, and taking too long until such time that the matters are struck off. So we have a high proportion of cases that don't make it to, they don't make it to trial. So there, those slides up to page 24 show you a comparison on performance, of those courts. Then from page 21, we talk to cases that have been dealt with by those courts, including the family advocate, where inquiries have been taking place. And on slide 22, we show you cases that involve children. And there you can see that in each province, we've managed to break down the various categories. For example, acute children under 18. We see there that the Western Cape has the highest number at 19,000 children under 18 that are in conflict with the law. And then the second highest province is the Eastern Cape, and followed by Gauteng and so forth. So what those statistics show you and what we've been able to get is the extent to which the children under 18 are affected by the or in conflict with the law, and what the numbers are. Appeal cases, adoption, those are just statistics to consider and take into account. We like to believe that those are not perfect statistics, but it's important that, and this is the first time we're reporting on this, Chair, is that the department must start providing this information, because our modernization program enables us to start gathering these statistics in the first place. On the next slide, page 23, cases involving children and families. These are family law matters, maintenance matters. You can see there that KwaZulu-Natal had the highest number of maintenance complaints at 53,000 during this particular period. As you know, Chair, our previous submission to this committee indicated that one maintenance file on average supports at least three dependents. So you can look at those figures there and multiply by three and get roughly a picture of the number of dependents that depend on that particular matter. So it really goes to show the extent to which we still have to work on all of these matters. Someone is issued, for example, KZN still at the highest number of 11,500. So these figures, again, are not perfect figures. We continue to update them every now and again. We can get direct information. On 24 and 25, we're giving feedback on the performance of various services by the state law advisors and the master of the High Court. And the figures there really speak for themselves. I think that on page 26, on deceased estates, what we're trying to show there is that there were 15,000 more cases than the previous year dealing with deceased estates, which is a growth of 15%. So there's a high incidence of cases, Chair, involving deceased estates of very small amounts, below 125,000, and in some cases below 50,000. So, and the biggest challenge where we've seen the increase is in the Midlands area and KZN. Our Pietermaritzburg office is loaded with a lot of cases, increasing on a day-to-day basis. On page 27, we show you again figures for this period, deceased estates, those below 125,000 and those greater than 125,000.
Then in other areas, we talk to the TRC matters, where pursuant to the TRC Act and the completion of the TRC, you know, of its work, there are a couple of things that the department had to do, one of which was to find the missing person and compensate and offer reparation to those identified and so affected. Really, there, what you do on page 28 is to indicate those people that have been assisted in terms of that particular program. On page 30, we talk to the financial information. That is the final appropriation, the vote, vote 22, and we show that that's the amount of money that was spent, and 424 million was unspent, of which 251 was an approved rollover, which we're still trying to spend. We hope to have it done before the end of this financial year, but all indications are that we may not be able to even spend all of that money. Chair, you will see that on slide 31, we show the breakdown. Most of our budget goes towards court services. So in other words, all the activities that take place in the court, they take a large chunk of the budget. And again, as they correctly showed, I mean, the core business of the department is working in the court. So that's the area where we should do it. On page 32, we talk about the expenditure. We show you where we are spending and where we are underspending. You will see that in goods and services, we don't spend as much as we should. Really, many of the underspend that we have on page 33 is on personnel. The more we are not able to fill our posts, the more we don't spend, because certainly you don't spend with respect to salaries, and where you would have employed somebody and the department would have spent on computers and other equipment, we then don't spend on that because we would not have recruited anybody. So on goods and services, you find that it really correlates to the vacancy rate, and the net result is that that's money that was projected to be spent on those activities. So if you're not able to fill up those posts, there are consequences budget-wise, and that becomes really unspent money. On capital works, the AMA expenditure is largely again occasioned by the inability of the Department of Public Works to assist us in all of our methods. As you know, we don't have jurisdiction of our capital works programs. Public Works does it on our behalf. So in some areas, they've been able to complete projects. In some areas, they haven't. So where they haven't been able to complete a project, they can't bill us. And obviously, even if they did, we wouldn't pay. So some of the unspent money is occasioned by this. We did a reprioritization of the budget share, the 420 million. We do this every September, end of September, where we monitor expenditure and under expenditure. If we are certain that there will be unspent money, we try and reprioritize. And how we reprioritize, we take the unspent money and seek to spend it on other priorities, but that are not funded, so that we can also manage to move ahead. Most of the programs that I mentioned earlier around modernization were all achieved with the reprioritized funding. They were not originally budgeted for, but we're able to do them because they were urgent, but because we're able to take advantage of areas where we're not able to spend money. So that type of work continues, but on page 34 we show where we spent a large part of that money. With respect to audit outcomes, the President's Fund had an unqualified audit, no emphasis of matter. With respect to the department, we had a qualified audit in two areas, third-party funds and also asset management, where it was felt that we don't have as clear the registers as we ought to have in those courts that were audited, and therefore we had to deal with it. Then emphasis of matter on the other matters that were identified. On page 37 and 38 and 39, maybe to a certain extent 40, that deals with how we are responding and we propose to respond to the audit qualification. With respect to third-party funds, that talks to the maintenance money that gets received. Historically, the Department of Justice performed a lot of services for many departments. It was a tax department collecting taxes, it was the traffic department collecting traffic fines. In fact, they still do when many of the of the members here present have to pay their traffic fines. They go to court and pay their traffic fines. We have to keep that money and pass it on. So the management of all of that fund is what is referred to as third party fund. If you are getting maintenance, you go to court, you get awarded a cost order in your favor for maintenance, somebody pays maintenance, that person comes and pays into court, and then somebody comes and collects that money. So all of that money has to be managed. So the department has to manage all of that money, and it's been doing so for a long time. The problem is that if you have a manual system where people pay cash and you give them a card, it's difficult to ensure proper accounting and reconciliation. And that's where some of the problems have arisen, because of the hard cash. And some people, when they make payments, they just post 400 rand in an envelope with nothing else. So when on the other end somebody receives an envelope with 400 rand and there's nothing else, it doesn't show, you know, now and again maybe 100 rand gross feet or 50 rand gross feet. And that's when the thieving starts to happen. So those are the problems we're trying to manage. So in many respects, the books then don't balance because there'll be a shortage of 50 rand or a shortage of 100 rand. In some cases, the money, the amounts do get higher, Chief, 50,000 rand, 100,000 rand. So to that extent, the auditors have felt that you know, those monies have to be accounted for, and where we've not been able to account for them properly because of theft and amongst other things, that's why we've got the audit qualification, because the books then don't balance at the end of the day. So one of the ways then going forward is the modernization, so that we create electronic systems for managing work. What we are currently working on, which we're going to start piloting in the new year, which is still being developed, is a system in terms of which it will not be necessary to pay cash into courts. One can just make a bank deposit, get a reference number, whether you're paying bail for somebody. For example, if somebody is arrested in Mitchell's Plain and you want to pay bail, you have to come to Mitchell's Plain court and pay bail at Mitchell's Plain court. You can't go to any other court and pay bail there for somebody held at Mitchell's Plain. So we're putting in place, for example, a system that will allow anybody to pay anywhere. You can go and pay at a bank directly. The court will be able to pick it up just through a reference number. You can pay out of any nearest court. The system will be able to pick it up, and it will be easy to deal with it. We hope that once these systems are in place, it will really no longer be necessary to handle, as in hard cash, by officials. So those are some of the ways in which we're hoping to reduce the incidence of inappropriate behavior by officials. With respect to asset management, the CFO has put in place a mechanism in terms of which we'll be able to register our assets and make sure that we follow up on time and make sure that we are able to scan and check that all of the assets are properly registered and are properly recorded in the register. Most of the assets really on which we qualified were assets that cost 5,000 rand or less. So small little items that get moved from office to office pretty quickly, and sometimes if one of them is missing, like a recorder, for example, it's difficult to really pick up. So it's those that are not properly registered, and we're in the process of just making sure that everyone is registered. On page 42, going forward, we show the number of posts and the vacancy rate. There, the vacancy rate is 20%. It's dropped to under 10% share, because at the time that we reported this, we're still filling many vacancies. Most of those vacancies are now filled. And since end of September, we've advertised another 800 or so posts. We hope that we'll fill them by the end of the year. So early in the new year, we're going to have a very low vacancy rate, and we'll fill up quite a lot of posts. Most of these posts are at grade 1 to 9, which is an administrative level, and we hope that to have them filled up. On page 43, we show the various statistical information on those different areas. Same thing with on page 44. The majority of officials, either their contract expires, and just to alert the honorable members, the department, because it always previously looked at its work from an administrative perspective, therefore employed people, either that are matriculants, but many that don't necessarily have a post-matric qualification. And some of them were employed on a contract basis. So when you terminate contracts and we employ full-time officials, that occasion that some of them then leave, their contracts don't get renewed, and so forth and so forth. So that's important to note. on the first two items. Labor relations cases, misconduct cases, you'll be able to see there in the chart that a large number of them, 64, are what we believe are fraud-related matters, and the majority of which arise out of the courts. And that's where we pick up these privileges and so forth and so forth. So really, the only way to stop this is to just not have the cash. And that's what we hope to do, to just remove the money from the court. Because, you know, it really is tempting. If you go to the end of the court and you go to what is a cash hold, you really see a banking service. It's not different to going to a bank on a Saturday to go and withdraw money. You just see cash. So we believe that the environment, even if people are not inherently thieves, the environment is tempting enough because of the vast amounts of money and the ease with which it can happen without being detected. In some areas, we've tried to use security cameras and put them there. But our view, Chair, is that as a department, that's not even our business. We shouldn't be spending resources on things like that. We should find a way of terminating completely the receipt of cash so that you can focus on providing legal services as opposed to financial services. On skills development, 46, 47, and 46, just shows the areas that we're trying to focus on, you know, where our programs are targeted at improving skills. It's mostly really all levels, you know, from a professional level, where people have to be specifically skilled in the specialist areas, to administration, where people have to be trained in finance in particular, and just general administration. The challenges on page 48 deal with quite a large number of issues. I think correctly so because of the nature of our business, but the most challenging will relate to the rollout of systems, modernization systems, and financial. Having highly trained financial persons to balance books is a costly exercise. Many of the people that you want, you are not able to recruit at the level that the post and government enable us to recruit them at. So we have to really try and find innovative ways to employ skilled financial people. Similarly with skilled asset managers, you know, properly trained people, it's a problem. With the rollout of modernization systems, the systems need maintenance. IT people, again, are very difficult to find. We never previously employed IT people. But we're looking at bringing in 20 people across the country to try and help us maintain the IT system. And because we're now really IT-focused, if a system is slow, it crashes, and there's nobody to fix it quickly, then nobody can function. It becomes a bit of a problem. So the challenges are vast, and they are in number. They relate to strategic issues around which honorable members are requested to assist, strategize about. Other issues are really purely political. They require political input and political decision-making about, you know, where to take the department. Others are really purely falling within our jurisdiction scope, and we have to deal with the management of the department and make sure that they work. Then others are judicial. They purely depend on the judiciary. And our best contribution is to just engage with the judiciary and persuade them that this is the best way to go. Thank you very much.
Wow, that was a mouthful. That was a mouthful. Thanks very much, DG, for taking us through. I'm glad that you can see colleagues. He was not reading, he was talking to the document. That's when you know your stuff. Thanks, DG. Yeah, colleagues, there we are. We can now engage the department in that form of question-answer session. Let me recognize the Honorable West, Honorable Nduli, Honorable Leroux, Mzizi, Mseki, in that order. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Just want to thank the department for their good briefing here. Just one thing, the department could save a lot of money immediately. I see they've duplicated everything in this book. Page 5 is then duplicated at the back 5. I don't know why that's happened.
In that order?
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson, and I will follow Daryl West about the good presentation done by the teacher.
I just want to make the difference, the demarcation of courts. I know you were talking about the main court and the but I'm worried about the old courts, demarcation and jurisdiction, where you find the court is in Durban, but it is servicing the people in Wangolosi, which is outside, and you find that maybe that court was used for previously, I would say, apartheid time, where there were courts for whites, and then, because if we go around it, those things have not been changed, then we are worried about that if we talk about the access to justice, where you find people are far away, they have to be taken to a different area just because of their color. So if you can highlight, how are you faring on that one? The other thing is it's about the foster care and the master's court. You know, particularly where I come from, Durban, where when you go to that master's court there in next to Smith Street, you don't get joy there. Particularly, I'm the victim because I refer people. Last time when we met with the director Simon. He referred me to that court. And then when I went there, they told me that, no, you can't come here without a lawyer. You need an attorney. Because, in fact, I organized the commune, foster parents to say you can go to that court so that you'll be assisted. But when I went there, they said, no, you can't come here as a layman. You need a lawyer to come representing these people, not you. Then I was just chased out like that. But in fact, I'll say I had different experience. When I came for the first time, everything was taken, and then I was told that, no, you must go and look for this, you must go and look for this, and all that. So I told this client. But when we brought it, then they said, no, who told you to bring these things? It's only lawyers who can handle this information, not you. So I want to find out what is the story. Secondly, is the process by the social workers. You know, my constituency is in Umlazo. When you go to the social workers, with an offer. They will say, what happened to his father? Then he said, no, this, it's a legitimate child. They went to court because the father will say, no, I'm not a legitimate father for this kid. Now you say, who is supposed to be the father? Because nobody agreed that he father the child. Now you say, here is the grandparent who are prepared to be fostered. No, the social workers will say, no, you must go and advertise this in the papers that this kid is looking for the father. But you say, no, but there is no father for this one. And then the lady could not show the father, but it's a long process. In fact, you start saying, hey, let me leave this. And people will say, hey, this MP is fooling us. We want to find out what is it supposed to be done. Can we get clarity? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks very much, Honorable Ntuli. In that order.
Thank you, Chair. I hope I'm in the right order. I thought the on page 33 where it's mentioned the underspending on capital works, and that it's actually public works that have let us down. Now the fact is we need space badly, we need upgrading of facilities. We've got the money. Now it's no use just saying capital works have let us down. What are we going to do about it? Because otherwise it will be perpetuated next year as well. And then the other thing, if the DG can say what amount of money was actually underspent. Thank you, sir.
For easy reference, that was the Honorable Leroux. In that order.
Thank you very much, Professor. Broadly, I think my questions first will, the first question that I'll raise will be on your access to justice on under that program, your item. DJ, you're pointing out very critical areas about access to justice, the challenge being your rural areas, the communities not being able to, not being in a position to access the court. And maybe just to add that, you know, in some instances we discovered as we're interacting with the police that part of the reasons that some cases are just being withdrawn is because of the distances. Now, I was looking at your challenges, your last page, whether you also addressing that aspect. I don't see that as, I don't see you raising that as a challenge that you need to deal with. That's one chairperson, but also with regard to the rollout of your infrastructure, I see you identify number of critical areas there. Part of what you identify is an issue of your electronic, e-governance or what is it? Essential. My interest will be to have an understanding, DG. If you, when you introduce this essential, is that also going hand in glove with the capacity building for people who are supposed to be dealing with this? Because sometimes you introduce these very good things with very good intention, only to find that people who are supposed to be using these things cannot really do that. I think, Chairperson, those are the two questions that I wanted to raise. Otherwise, let me join the colleagues to commend the department for having done a lot with regard to ensuring that the work is done.
Thanks. Thanks very much, and that was the Honorable Museki. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, I can see that my colleagues are very lenient today, short questions and all. I don't know why. Or they're leaving it up to me. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't want to speculate. I want to be practical. I would talk about the province that I come from because I visit that province very well. On page 4, on access to justice, I'm happy that I can see the infrastructure that you are actually engaging in the current financial year, which is now 2006 and 2007. Now, you say on the third bulletin, 6 new buildings are presently in construction. You made mention of Davidon, that is in Gauteng. You made mention of Sakali, that is in Gauteng. I'm not aware of it. I can illustrate to you that recently we have had meetings which had also included Mr. Gianni, Advocate Gianni, in Alberton. The reason behind was that we wanted to bring back the original court, which was in Alberton, which is now in Germiston, which is deservicing the whole Cataract area. We are sending something in the region in a month, in the region a day, 150 cases. per month, and they can only dispose of 40 cases. Now we can see the padlock that they have. Now, we were then engaged in that they want to build a new complex between Zonkezizwe and that Indian colored area, which is going to be a massive building that it incorporates the family courts, regional courts, and many other things. That thing is not shooting off the ground. We were having a problem. We wanted to have alternative route that which way can we go in order to service the people. We are not getting anywhere. Now, my reasoning, probably you might help me. I think when you take clustering them, I think Brakpan Springs, Nigel, and many, they fall under Kempton Park, which are not in Westman on this side. Probably that's the reason why we were not mentioning of this new building. Though I visit those areas, I'm not aware of it. Now, probably would elaborate more on what is envisaged, because Sakani is close to nearby. It's close to Niger. It's close to Brakpan. It is also close to Western to Springs. I think the services is quite adequate there. But if we have a court, we say bring justice closer to people. Now, on page 5, sir, you're talking about the department has installed 126 X-ray machines and 191 walk-through metal detectors and 19 closed-circuit television. Probably, it might be probably in the Supreme Court and other courts. But let me be specific. Albertone, where I stay, and many others that I've visited, those metal detectors are not working. In Albertone, we had meetings, after meetings, about the very same thing, an incident of Albertone. I'm sure you are aware that a person was shot right at court A. We don't know how this was suspect, because he was a suspect. What was he going to do with the gun in court? Now, that's why we're focusing on those metals. You can go there with your cell phone, doesn't ring. They have now outsourced this to a private company. You went to there, it doesn't make any blip. You go to him and say, search me. He searches you, and the machine says, blip, blip, blip. He says, thank you, sir, to go. How can you employ people who would want? He can hear that they're blipping, but he's not searching you. Now, this thing though in Albertine is not working. And many other areas I've went to Krugersdorp and many other, and it's not taken care of. The legislators are not protected. So may I take page 6 and coupled with page 11. We talk of maintenance costs. Maintenance is now talk about maintenance service which has increased. When I coupled with the page 7, page 11, there you talk about some additional stuff on your last bulletin. A total of 77 legal interns were appointed to help fast-track the maintenance backlog. It has got gray balls. At some stage, prosecutors were trained to do this maintenance. I don't know what happened to it. Now we have these people. Now we have the family court that is intended to do this kind of a job. I don't know how far. We do have family courts, but let me not be specific. In Johannesburg, you have family courts in town. Recently, we had a meeting with Mrs. Kosana and then the regional person, Emily, and on all other stakeholders, regional court ministers, and many other people in Protea. Specifically on the very issue that why do you have maintenance court where people will travel from Soweto to Johannesburg? Soweto is as big as the Western Johannesburg. Why don't you bring that? We were told another story that it is intended to have another complex court in Jabulani. I don't know, it's a dream pipe. The reason why we had to convince some of the magistrates who were total against it, they said it's not central, they said there's no centrality in this thing. We will build courts everywhere.
where it's accessible to people. It's not going to help us, but do we have in mind that the family court should also be included so that Soweto, as big as it is, it doesn't go to Johannesburg towards them for maintenance. So these are some of the things that I want to raise, and the other one is on page 21. In this round. Then I can fire on the other one. Okay. On page 21, I think it's very full. You have been very lenient, you know, I must say, I must comment. I was prepared to fight. Chairperson on the map on this round, page 21. You talk about the High Court's cases finalized. And I can see the number. And the still outstanding, which is 1214. Now, may I get the wisdom there? When we talk of high courts, we talk of these judges, but when we say these are outstanding, are they remanded cases? Because there's a lot of outstanding cases actually you go to the, they could still call it the correctional services, now correctional centers. Go to the correctional centers. A lot of cases of the Supreme Court cases are still there. We don't know whether they're going to, some of them are going to see light. Now, if we say they're outstanding, is it those cases that are still waiting to be tried, or is it cases that have been now tried, and the judge has to now take a leave to go and sit down and prepare the final verdict? How do we differentiate that? Coupled with one aspect, the Constitutional Court, how often does it sit? And how many cases do they dispose of? Because their hours of work is not contained. We would like to know who mends that name. How do we know how many courts do they have? Because I would suggest that if they only have courts in a while, once in a while, then they could be just as well be pulling court in the High Court and then have the High Court those outstanding cases in the reminded cases. I would probably like to hear about that one. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, your last question, by the way. No, they are milking the bull, Baba. They are milking the bull. I don't know what's going to come out of that. Well, I'm milking the pool. That was Honorable Muzizi. In that order, Honorable Manyosi, then Baralwe. Oh, Honorable Yanda, you're in the
Thank you, Chairperson. I must also admire the department for work well done. My first question is, what problems do you experience with regard to cluster coordination? And what do you propose to do to address those problems? I see under challenges that you are saying strengthening cluster and interdepartmental relations and operation. I'm asking this question because in some areas that we have visited, you will find that coordination of the criminal justice cluster is poor, and that leads to various problems, including overcrowding, that is existing. The other one is with regard to savings in operational costs because of delays in appointments. But then I want to ask a specific question here, and around the area where your offices are, where you are stationed, that is in Tshwane. What is the extent of judicial transformation in the Pretoria Court, where you will get reports that posts are deliberately left open in order to appoint candidates of particular sections of our society, and where you will get complaints from judicial officers that meetings are conducted in a particular language that is not understood by some of the judicial officers that is in their normal staff meeting. For example, where in some regional courts in that area, meetings are conducted in Afrikaans, and some of the judicial officers did study Afrikaans but cannot fluently speak in Tsonga.
Thanks, that was the Honorable Manyosi. Can I recognize the Honorable Nyanda, and then Daryl will close.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is the department is further improving the modernization of the deceased and the insolvent estate service. I've got a problem with this. In other magistrate court, in Mpumalanga, let me say that, the master's office, he deals only with signing. The clerks there, they are the people who are dealing with this issue, and he only signs. One time, he signs only to find that the person who is there is not the real person. And the money was transferred to him. After a long time, the real people come to the master. They wanted to know where is the estate. Only to find that the estate is gone. Now they must start to trace the person who took the estate for these people. Now I just want to find out, how do you deal with this one? Can I be clarified so that I must know? Because the very same person who did this, he went to the Home Affairs to get a death certificate. It's only 6 rand to get a death certificate. And he went to submit that death certificate in the estate service. And he got the money just like that. I just want to be clarified how to stop this estate service. Thank you, Chairperson. Oh, my last question is this one. The department reduced a number of temporary employees and acting appointments. I just want to find out, because there's money that was not spent and there were temporary people. I don't know whether they don't qualify, that's why they are temporary. Because in most cases, when you go to the department, they will tell you that we've got vacancies, but you don't get qualified people. Thank you, Chairperson.
That was Mama Unyanda. She didn't want to illustrate exactly the problem with how are they cheating in signing for those to get those monies. They're using something that looks like this thumb when they sign it. I don't know what is it, but I can't say it in this meeting. Well, I'm going to run. Something they're using looks like a thumb. They use it. They take the ink and this thing goes to the gents and make that thing to sign and come back. Yeah, and they're on this one, Darrell. Honorable West.
Thanks, Chair. I hope I'm not repeating questions here. Just in terms of this book here, quarter hours, I see they've been steadily declining except for High Court, 3 hours 20, it's stuck on there. The others are declining. We used to have Saturday courts, I suppose, the department, that's barely overtime to be paid there, I don't know, just a comment. The other thing is, on one of the pages, it must be page 36, it says, a lack of human resource plan, vacancy rate of 23%. That was on the audit outcomes. Yet, if I have a look on the page 42, it says a vacancy rate 20%. I don't know why there's a discrepancy, but it is quite a high vacancy rate. It's nearly a quarter of the departments, not quite, but almost. What's the department going to do about that? Yes, those are my two questions. Thank you. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Kudi, was that up? Not in this round.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, let me say the your bucket is full for now. Let me allow you to try and empty it yourself. How can go in the next round? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the honorable members for raising the question. I'll answer all of them. On the question by Honorable Ntuli on the demarcation, we are familiar with that problem. The demarcation that I mentioned firstly deals with just the alignment of magisterial districts to municipal boundaries, because currently it's not so aligned. So we have to look at aligning. The other demarcation deals with demarcation on jurisdiction of each court. What jurisdiction that a court has over a certain area. Excuse me. For that one, the minister has asked us to actually consult widely about it. Because before, this has a particular impact when it comes to, for example, to foster care issues and social grants. Social Development Department has come to us to say that in the Eastern Cape, for example, people struggle because they can't get a magistrate to sign for an adoption, for example, in a nearest court. They have to go to the further court because the nearest court, for some reason, doesn't have jurisdiction. So we've looked at those issues, and we still are. We're currently doing a study to try and find out what the impact is of changing jurisdiction. You know, for example, I mean, yeah, so it can also apply in criminal matters. If you deal with a matter in the Cape Town CBD, the nearest court is the Cape Town CBD, but there's one back to which you cannot necessarily go for a number of reasons, or the Skyleach and so forth. So we're looking at what the impact would be of giving a particular court broader jurisdiction. Because in some areas, within close proximity, if you use the municipal boundary, where you say Joburg Metro, within Joburg Metro there's a number of courts. But how do you carve out jurisdiction per court? Because you can't be in Joburg and necessarily go to a court in Soweto or Randburg. But somebody has to come and say, why not? What should be the problem then? Because it's within proximity. If I choose to go to the court further to me, that's my problem, as long as I'm within the same jurisdiction. So it's the same thing with the points raised by Honorable Mzizi, to say, in certain areas you find that there may be sufficient courts available to service those communities, but one gets left out. If you give all of those courts concurrent jurisdiction, what is going to be the implication? So we're currently looking at that work to say what will be the implication, because it's easy to correct, because the minister just issued a proclamation to say this court and that court will have jurisdiction over the following areas, or over this wide area. But the practical impact, so we're consulting also with the legal profession that have raised an issue to say be very cautious in changing jurisdiction, because what you have here, forum shopping. Somebody may pick a court. Somebody may pick a court on the basis of it can be ethnic, it can be race, it can be anything. Because in a particular area, I'm likely to find magistrates that think like me, then people will cherry pick in that area when it's not necessarily the right thing to do. So we're trying to find a scientific way in which jurisdiction on areas, that the court should deal with, and the geographic area over which a court should have jurisdiction. We're currently studying. We could have sorted it out by now, but it's just the implication that became a bit more sophisticated than we thought it would be. It's easy to do on paper, but when you reflect on it and you look at the practical implication, it just presents more difficulties. But we are alive precisely to that issue. We're hoping again that by the end of the financial year we would have resolved this issue. A task team is in place, Chair, that's looking at these issues. SA is also part of that team. They're helping us with information about human settlements and how to deal with those issues. But the point that Honorable Ntuli raised around jurisdictional amounts is possibly the last reality. Another typical example, Venda High Court, or what used to be Venda High Court, doesn't have jurisdiction to deal with really civil matters, because the court of that jurisdiction is the Transvaal Provincial Division in Pretoria. So for people in the government of Limpopo, it still has to deal with matters in Pretoria. If something happens in December in Limpopo and there's a need for an urgent High Court application, it will have to come to Pretoria because the Venda High Court hasn't got jurisdiction. So when we argued and said, why don't we give the Venda High Court concurrent jurisdiction in Pretoria, then there were practical implications to say, well, it's not as easy as you say. So you need to look into those types of issues. So it's something that we're looking at, because it is a major problem. On the issue of foster care, I'll link that with the question that the Honorable Umamunyanda raised. Some of the problems are just linked purely to incompetence, I must tell you. And that issue, there's no reason why you're not assisted. I just get the impression that the people that maybe you encountered on that day are not legally qualified to explain to you the legal issues and how they should deal with it. They're admin officials. So to save themselves embarrassment, they just said, no, you don't have to be here, they referred you also. Because really, the issues are about the quality of the service that you offer. And that's been the problem, and those, you know, with the department. And those are the strategic issues that, you know, I mentioned, Chair, would have to be considered in the department. Historically, this department always looked at itself as providing administrative work, just assisting, facilitate people, feel almost like home affairs. But in actual fact, it is not exactly like that. Because when somebody comes with that type of problem, somebody must provide legal advice on what's possible and what's not possible. Somebody has to provide legal advice on maintenance, what's possible and what's not possible. But the way we've recruited in the past is that we filled our ranks with admin officials who are not necessarily lawyers. So they can't advise. So therefore, when you have a problem, it reflects itself in the quality of the service that you get, you know, and the attitude. So now we have to reverse that whole thing and start employing lawyers. And that is what we've started doing. We started employing them so that, you know, at least they're able to give a certain level of legal advice. Even if it's not the best legal advice you can get, but it's better than an admin advice. So based on what Honorable Duli just mentioned, I just get an impression that you possibly just came across somebody with a standard 10 who couldn't explain to you exactly what's available for you. I mean, that person was literally referring you to a lawyer, to say, go to a lawyer and get the assistance you need, instead of providing that assistance right there in the court by saying, these are the forms that are required to be filled. If the procedure requires that forms be filled, this is where you should go, get a commissioner of oath. It's those types of issues. The department, unfortunately, in most of the courts, you'll find that it is infested with people at their particular level. The only way to change it is not to wait for people to get legal degrees. It's actually retrench some of the people and bring new people all together. That's the unfortunate part. That's why when you say the temporary official, where we're decreasing the number, that's what we started doing, because we picked it up as a problem. So we're reducing the incidence of temporary officials and contract officials who are not. So we looked at the volume of the service, of the demand, and we said, how do we support and give a service to these 500 people that came today? Let's bring in temps, anyone that's unemployed, come and help us. And for God to say, but when you help us, that person is not just looking at filling a form. That person is looking at legal advice. How are you going to advise them if you're not qualified? Let them the service deteriorate and it gets bad. So what sometimes you see is just an attitude and poor but superior principles. It's actually a reflection of the lack of understanding of that person of what they're supposed to do in the first place. So you see that in the master's office. When people come, they're not able to pick up that this is not a thumbprint. They're not able to pick up that this is not it's not a fingerprint. You see, you have those types of problems because the attitude is that I don't have to learn the procedure. You know, if you want to administer an estate, you know, in terms of the law, the family nominates an executor or an executrix. So if somebody comes and says, here's an estate, somebody passed away. If I'm a lawyer, on the other hand, helping you out, I'll check your credential. Are you a family member? Show me how you're a family member, your ID and all of those things. But most of the admin officials, because they don't have the law, they don't ask those things. They don't really care. If you say, here's my commissioner report, here's my statement, I can't sign, I can't read, but I've got a thumbprint, nobody looks to say, well, is there a thumbprint? Because somebody should be able to pick up that there are no lines, so this can't be right. So in fact, if there are no prints, like in the thumbprint or whatever the case may be, then you know that's a fraud. So people are not able to pick that up because they are not familiar with the procedure that should be followed as the law requires, because they are not lawyers. So the only way we can respond as a department, which we've started to do, is to say in the master's office, your master, your deputy master, your assistant master, those should be lawyers. It can't be admin officials. In the master's office, in the maintenance office, your maintenance officer, correctly said by you, Mr. Mzizi, it's a prosecutor, because that person deals with a specific process, which is the appearance before a presiding officer to lead evidence. That's why it has to be a prosecutor. In terms of the act, the maintenance prosecutor does that. But because the NPA has not been providing prosecutors, in the NPA, if you are a poor performer in a criminal court, you get punished by being sent to a maintenance court. That's how it works. That's how you get punished. You get sent to the maintenance court to deal with maintenance matters. It's not a strategic area of focus, because as far as the NPA is concerned, we deal with prosecuting criminals. So if you are not a good performer in the criminal court, you get banished to the sin bin, which is the maintenance court. So those are the problems that are there. And we're saying, we've got to change this whole thing around. Maybe don't give up those types of prosecutors. It's like court orderlies. Court orderlies, those policemen in the court, they are being punished. If they're a bad performer in the police station, you get banished to go and stand in the court and be a court order. So they don't have the same dedication. So we get, in a sense, the delinquents in the police service or in the prosecution service. That is what happens. So that's what we pick up, because when you look at complaints from the public and you try and understand what's wrong with this situation, and you make follow-ups with supervisors, that's when you pick up that, oh, this one has just undergone a disciplinary hearing, and part of the punishment is to go and be a court orderly, or is to go and be a maintenance prosecutor. So the strategic decision that we have to make as a department is to say, let's then employ our own people that we will train and make sure they perform the service. So both the masters and the maintenance court, this is what occasions this type of behavior. But the primary problem is that we have temporary officials who are not legally qualified, because we look at our work as purely administrative, as in a civic work. When it's not civic work, it's actually legal work. And what we should be is really a very big legal firm. That's what we should be, the Department of Justice, because that's what we provide more than anything else. But we are not. We're a duplication of Home Affairs or another type of department that doesn't spend too much of its time giving legal service. On Capital Works, by Honorable LaRue, we've engaged with Public Works. With the previous administration, we had even reached an agreement that maybe let's do our own Capital Works, we'll just report. The new administration felt that you can't do this, because if it allows it for Department of Justice, then the police will come, then correctional services will come, then why do you need a Public Works department? So it was first that let's give Public Works an opportunity, let's engage with it. If necessary, we'll appoint specific task teams. The problem there is that what they actually do, and this is how we had argued with them, that we know your process. Because all you do is we tell you which courts we need fixed and what we want done. You then go on tender and bring in consultants. Why can't we do that? Because you can't do that. So where it will take you maybe 6 months to do that, maybe we can take a shorter period because we have a keen interest. So allow us to do those things and let's do the work. Unfortunately, we didn't reach agreement. They insisted that this is their business, there's nothing they can do. We reported the matter to Treasury to say, look, we do have these problems. And Treasury said, look, we're also trying to help in the best way we can. We're looking at how this can be done broadly as a government. But really, the main issue is whether DPW should continue doing this work. And if it doesn't do that work, and departments can do these things themselves, to then need a specific department as a specific. So we have to always engage and engage and engage. But where we find opportunities, we do it ourselves, and then we report back to Public Works. But by and large, the biggest areas of work, the thing is the regulations. If you want to change the air conditioning, you can't do it. You must wait for Public Works to come and change the air conditioning. You know, if you are modernizing and you need to change the wiring, the electrical wiring here, you must get Public Works to do that. You can't do it yourself. So we can't get a consulting electrician to do it, because it must meet certain specifications. I think that's a bigger issue than to say, well, what do we do? And the minister has raised with the council about to say, please, how can we get this thing to work? The problem is that it affects more than us. It's just that we feel it's the biggest, because for us it affects us right where we do the actual work, as opposed to other departments. Maybe it's a secondary issue. For us, it's the primary issue. So it does become a problem. The issues about the Joburg High Court changing the list. We've been waiting for Public Works for the past 2.5 years to do it. We can't do it. And the lifts are old. They have to be replaced. They can't be fixed anymore because the spare parts are no longer available. So every day it changes. So judges get trapped every day and they call and say, please get me out. And those types of problems are there. That's why it's going to the stage where they are fed up and some of them do report these things to the media. And we have to find ways around it. We've only managed now to really just say to Public Works, you know what, we're going to do this thing ourselves. And we started doing it. And unfortunately, it's going to take us 28 weeks to replace the whole lift. But those are the challenges that we face on Public Works issue. Similarly, on the cost being far away from people, Honorable Mr. raised this thing. To build a course, we don't do it. We have Public Works to do it. So when we identify land in Mpumalanga to build a high course, we don't do it. We go to Public Works and we say, please get us land in Mpumalanga. We want to build a high court. Now, how long they take will depend on how seriously they take the issue. And they try to assist us. It's the same thing with Limpopo. Once you go through that process, then we say, let the construction process begin. So it's a process that is ready, that we outsource, or that is outsourced on our behalf to Public Works. So identifying areas to build courts is not the biggest problem for us. We can identify. But the process of constructing, then involves another department. Then secondly, the issue of the budget. We generally spend 99% of our budget, so we don't have a problem of underspending our capital works budget. But I can identify as a department 20 courts to be built for 1 billion. The problem is the budget. We don't get a billion to do. So it's always, as you can see, it's always 5-6 courts per annum. And we've had problems with that. You say it can't be right. Otherwise we'll never finish. It must be like housing at some point where we say, yeah, 50 courts to be built over the next 18, 24 months. And it must just be one project. But to persuade other departments to assist us either with the budget, the first point of focus is to say, justice always underspent, so we can't give you more. So we have to argue to say, but these are different issues. On capital works, it's not a problem. On personnel, it's a different problem which needs to be looked at differently in itself. So those are the problems we have. The only way we improvise is to put mobile courts. But mobile courts are not really the best courts you can put for people. It's a mobile structure, so it's not necessarily the best thing to do. You must build a hard court from bottom up. On modernization, yes, it is a problem. We don't have IT people. We are contracting those to come and help us. The problem is that we never anticipated the future as a department. To say what will happen in 10 years' time, what will happen in 15 years' time. We always work on the basis that these things are not going to change. So we are trying to get to where SARS is at now, because SARS used to be where we are. But now we're trying to get to where SARS is. So there are a number of challenges to get there. You must get your network in place, and then you must get the right people and pay them well. So unfortunately, it's going to take us longer to get to pay them the way SARS pays. But in terms of systems, you must get to where the systems are at. But now we must recruit the right people. But what do you do with the people that are already there? They can't use computers. Because we have a problem. There are people that can't use computers. So the first thing to say, this thing doesn't work. But when you get there, you find that it does work. And when you check the calls that are logged, and you try and understand what happened, when the IT people arrive at a place, they put a note to say what was wrong with the system. You find that with officials, with magistrates, and with judges, some of the problem is that they forget their password. And part of the problem is that they're not familiar with the keyboard, so they're not sure, so the best thing is just put it aside. And then they work manually. So we do have those challenges where we say people must be reskilled to learn computers because those are new systems being applied. So if you can't see the mouse or the cursor on a computer, people then say it's not working. So the retraining is extremely important. It's there. I mean, we find that it happens. And sometimes it's generational, unfortunately. I mean, a lot of people don't find that comfortable, but it is generational. The more the elder the generation, the more really they don't want to move from something that they're familiar with. So it's the challenges that we face. It's a major challenge. So people see it as a problem as opposed to seeing it as an opportunity. We've spent millions on providing new computers. We provided the magistrates with digital dictaphones because they don't have the pedals that are used for secretary. They don't want them. They want the old ones that they're used. And you think these are better because you talk to it, then you plug it into your computer, and then you hear the speech, and then you can type. They say, no, they want the one where there's a cassette where you put in your head, and then your secretary types. So we do have those types of problems. Others that are very happy with IT, they love
they love the system. So it's a bit of a challenge back and forth. So modernization, yes, it does affect us because of those types of challenges. With respect to Aberdeen, I look at this one specifically in Dagani. Maybe the court is not finished in Dagani, it's being built, but if there's a problem of over-servicing, I think it's something to look at slightly differently. But our advice is that in that area, you possibly do have courts in that particular place. It has a Dagani in the township. It needs a court of its own because of its size. Because of its size, and people still have to get out of Dagani and go to another area to get services. And the view is that Dagani must have its own court, and that's what we're trying to provide for. With the issue of security, I think the issue of security is a day-to-day management. There's no reason why they shouldn't be working. So I think now that you've picked it up, we'll just call the court manager to find out what exactly. We have found that there are problems sometimes with higher security because, you know, it's not something that they care too much about. They're really contracted. Some of them we notice that they don't do this. We do tests ourselves. I went to the Joburg High Court after speaking to some judges, and I stood there next to them. They didn't know who I was because I wasn't dressed properly for that occasion. And somebody walked, and it went beep, beep. And we said to the court manager, and we watched four security officials just watch somebody walk past. We had to tell them to say, but here's the person that just stopped. Aren't you supposed to stop? And they said, oh, yes, you're right. And then they, you know, we do have those types of problems where people are not doing their job properly. So it's your day-to-day management that you need to do. In some cases, unfortunately, they do connive with staff officials. So somebody can still smuggle something. Because officials use vehicles and they go underground. You know, we find that it may very well be things like that. In Pretoria, for example, where a prosecutor was stabbed, those ones work very well. We just suspect that somebody may very well have aided that person to bring in that particular equipment. So it's a bit of a challenge, the issue of security. That's why we felt that CCTV cameras are better, because even if an incident happens inside the court, there should be cameras that at least pick it up for evidentiary value later when somebody is running outside. So to purely put an X-ray machine at the entrance, the court sometimes are big, they've got many passages inside, and you don't know what anything can happen to. But at least if we can pick up activities there, it will really help us. So we're looking at increasing that. I've dealt with the issue of maintenance and the quality of service. On the High Court statistics, I think those are High Court appeals only, just appeals backlog, you know, on how many appeals are outstanding. And there is a huge effort to reduce the appeals backlog. The Constitutional Court issue and jurisdiction is the subject of major public debate. The bills are shelved because of those types of issues. The real point is that currently the two highest courts in the land, it's not the Constitutional Court. It's the Supreme Court of Appeals on matters that are not constitutional. That's the highest court, because the Constitutional Court doesn't have jurisdiction on areas that don't relate to the constitutional issues. Then you have the Constitutional Court that deals with constitutional issues only. So if you're dealing with a pure criminal matter, nothing constitutional, and you want to go to the highest court of appeals, you go as far as the Supreme Court of Appeals in terms of appeals. You don't take that to the Constitutional Court. So the issue is, in terms of the Constitution, we must rationalize the court, and really the Constitutional Court is the highest court in the land. So it must deal with non-constitutional appeals as well, non-constitutional matters. So the Superior Court Bill was designed to create them. So unfortunately, it's still in Parliament because of the areas of dispute. But there are other issues about what you do with the Supreme Court of Appeals then. You know, do you match the two, or how do you deal with it? So those issues are still subject to discussion with the judiciary to say, what does an apex court mean? How do you operationalize? But in the meantime, depending on the issue, you go either way. If you lose on appealing the Constitutional Court, Supreme Court of Appeals, you then have to build a constitutional issue so that you can have access to the Constitutional Court. You know, that's the only way to get there if you want to keep testing the system. But otherwise, you should end at the Supreme Court of Appeals if you don't have a constitutional issue. On cluster coordination is a very difficult one. On criminal matters in particular, as you know, the matter will not be placed before a magistrate or a judge unless the prosecutor believes there's enough case to prosecute. You know, you must have a prima facie case, and in addition to having a prima facie case, you must believe that if you prosecute, you are likely to succeed. You may have a prima facie case, but if on the analysis of the evidence, you may believe that I'm not going to succeed.
And a prosecutor then makes a judgment to say it's not worth putting it on the hold. Remove. But those things are not explained to our people because people don't understand. You know, as far as they know, he did it or she did it, therefore it should fall. But the evidence that's required to prove the offense, even if there's a witness, the question is, what does the witness give you? Will that witness enable the prosecutor to succeed in the case? If a prosecutor feels it's not possible, that's where the independence of prosecutors comes in. Deciding at that point that this one I'm prosecuting or this one I'm not prosecuting. That's as far as the independence of the prosecution authority goes, by the way, not beyond it. So cluster coordination is difficult because you require the police to finish the investigation. If the police don't finish an investigation, nothing happens. So we're working with them to just ensure that they speed up their investigation and also the evidence that they gather is correct. They can investigate for a long time, come to a prosecutor, and the prosecutor says, I need an eyewitness. So what you have is circumstantial evidence. I can't work on this. So the police sometimes get upset to say, but we've been working on this for a long time, you cannot prosecute. And those debates happen. So we're trying to get everybody to work together from beginning, so that at the end, these things get sorted out. But in the meantime, and during the investigation, somebody is awaiting trial. That person is an awaiting trial detainee. So we're dealing with those types of issues. Staffing concerns, I think I have dealt with. Judicial transformation. Firstly, on appointment, the minister doesn't have a role really on the process of appointment until such time that the Magistrates Commission sends to the minister names of people that it recommends. So if the Magistrates Commission feels that we don't have to fill these vacancies at this particular court, the only thing that the executive can do is to engage with the chairperson of the Magistrates Commission to say, please make sure that these appointments are done. And they sit on certain specific times of the year, just like the JSC. They don't sit any time. They're scheduled meetings. If they miss advertising or they miss interviews, then they have to wait for the next round when they sit again. So they don't sit as often as other structures do. On the issue of language, I think this is a question of engaging with the officials concerned to try and find out what happens. I think meetings of officials obviously have to be in a language that everybody can understand, that is present, and we can only follow up on it. Again, the executive and the department don't have much role to play. We only have a role to play in the court, in the proceedings in the court, and we try to provide that with interpreter service. With respect to Mpumalanga, as I said, you know, the issues about the quality of services. In fact, one of the problems we've identified is that the master's office in Mpumalanga is really not properly established. We're trying to establish it now properly, have it fully fledged. Same thing with the family advocates service. The problem is we're struggling to find a building that we can rent. There aren't any, even the land to buy is difficult to buy. I think land is so prime in Mpumalanga that it's very expensive. In fact, other sellers have said to us, we don't want to sell, we want to swap. So we have to go to public works and say, can you please swap with this landlord? Yeah, you know, in exchange for this. And we are not in control of those. So there's a different problem in Mpumalanga. It's just a fundamental problem. It's a small town, near Spruit and other towns, and there's not enough land. The buildings are there already fully occupied. So how do you roll out services there? We have to, in the meantime, maybe provide for mobile services to be provided. But the actual service just doesn't exist. That's why 15 Market Street is too full, because it's servicing people from Soweto and so forth. What we've done on those areas, we've separated our service. We've said, where people are purely asking to fill in forms, to get legal advice, we should be able to provide that service anywhere, not just in the court. You don't have to come to court to know them, foster services. So everywhere where we can find space as a department, let's rent offices, even if it's five, it's six of officials working out of it. That's the provision of that advice. It doesn't require payments of money. It doesn't require receipt of money. It's just pure administrative. But let's employ proper lawyers to provide it. So we're looking at rolling out those services in many places so that we can stop this concentration at 15 Market Street, at Cape Town Court, and Umlazi and so forth. You can go from Umlazi Court and take some matters to, you know, Umlazi Shopping Center, rent, and go to other areas in the various places. So that's what we're looking at, to try and move away from this concentration of one place. In any event, it's a misrepresentation because it suggests that everybody comes from that area when nobody comes from that area. And also with the modernization of systems, you should be able to get a service anyway. Because currently, if you go to Mabaso, master's office, and you open your case there, whether it's maintenance or whatever, and you get your card, then you relocate to Joburg. Your matter remains in Mabaso. So whenever you need to deal with that matter, you must travel to Mabaso. And the advantage then of using electronic systems is that you can go anywhere. You don't have to go back to your original place, because all the officials do is link onto the system and they can pick up your ID. So those are the issues that we are dealing with. Court hours, it's a problem. Because what it suggests is that court sits for a few hours and then nothing happens for the rest of the day. The judiciary advises us that unless the prosecutor say, I've got a matter, why should I be in court? I'm not going to sit in court and nothing is happening. So I'll be in my chamber. If the prosecutor says, here's a case, I'll obviously come to court. So the problem is not with us as the judiciary. The problem is with your prosecutor. They must place matters before the law. You know, if there's no witnesses, there's nothing we can do. So again, we're trying to say, maybe in scheduling cases, the judiciary and the prosecution need to agree and anticipate that some matters collapse. And if a matter collapses, that should not mean that's the end of the day for everyone. There should be another matter that's capable of being placed on the roll. Because we've seen a spillover effect to our interpreters. As soon as the case is adjourned, interpreters then go home. They don't come back because there's nothing to interpret. So we've had to start giving them work to do to say, well, if you're not interpreting in court, you're doing something else in the back office. Because you're employed full-time to work from morning until afternoon. You can't leave before lunch or you can't leave after lunch. So those are the various areas, Chair, that we're dealing with. The vacancy rate, at the time, it was really around 20-23%. We do have a human resource plan. At the time of the audit, we haven't completed signing off. It's been signed off on. It is in place. And the vacancy rate at the time was that much. It's not that much. It's just about 10-11% now. And we're hoping that by end of this calendar year, we'll have reduced it further. We're currently undergoing multiple interview processes trying to bring it in. We think we should be able to reduce it to just under 5% by end of the financial year. So there are a couple of interventions that we've put in place to try and achieve that change. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Good. Can I... Yeah, Honorable Ntuli and Honorable West.
Thanks, Chairperson. It's a follow-up about the cluster meetings. When we are talking about the cluster meetings, we are talking about where at a provincial level or at a national level, where all the cluster departments in our languages, in the constituency, we call it the community safety forums. We wanted to check that whether who is supposed to lead that one, or let's say when we allocated the budget, I remember that we were saying the cabinet has approved that, but we are not sure from which budget are they going to be supplied from. We wanted to find out that, plus whether it is viable. Are they meeting? All that. Is it going to help us as the community? Thanks.
Thank you very much,
sir. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, if I may have a follow-up on this independence of prosecutorial areas. Area is that it is indeed so where the prosecutor can decide. Now, Mbembe, what do you think? Do you think perhaps the inquisitorial system would help? Because in that case, even if the prosecutor may feel that he or she doesn't have any input to get a conviction. But with the inquisitorial system, the magistrate may come in and probably help the prosecutor to gain that conviction. rather than our system, which is an adversarial system. During the time when I was still there, this could have happened. You would see the minister sitting down, as you see that the prosecutor fumbling. And eventually, he would say, if it was me, I would have sent you to jail, but because the state had failed to prove his case, you're not guilty in the judge. You can see that the person is very infuriated about the conduct of the incompetence of the prosecutor. What is your input on that? The last one, which I had to reserve that on page 18, as you speak about the performance of conviction rate, I don't know whether do we take the umbrella thing where good courts and bad courts have actually done well, then we say this is the conviction rate, these are the downfall. Because if we could be going on regions, that cluster regions, we will definitely pick up this thing. If you go to Kagiso, for instance, in my area, we once went there in the provincial week. The CPFs were complaining that there's no conviction in Kagiso court. All cases have been thrown out, withdrawn, struck off wrong. Do that. And we went there and asked, spoke to the prosecutor, said to me, when I said I would like to know cases that have been reminded or undetected, which came to you, and said he was black, and eventually said to me, we have got about 200 and odds unresolved cases, docket. I said, I'll get babies in my stomach if you say that. When are they going to see light? These are kind of things that I can see that why Kagiso is not performing. In Krugersdorp itself, I went to speak to Magistrate de Plessis about the prosecutor. He said, my conviction rate has gone down because I had to go back in the inquisitorial system because I could see that I don't have a good prosecutor. And I'm not dealing with cases, but I'm dealing with serious cases. Now, if the magistrate realized he's an old back. Now, how can we help the system to function? Which system do you think would probably help us?
Thank you very much. Those are the last questions in this round. There is Fresh T, who can quietly sneak out and grab tea, because I don't want to adjourn so that we finish on time. Yeah, I wanted to respond to this one. So my questions, I think they will take them along. They will just send them in writing. But, let's respond to these few questions as well as the DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The issue of community safety forums, the Department of Safety and Security is the one that is responsible. And I know that the discussions between that department and government as a whole, in all of its three areas, national, provincial, and local government. The approach was that if the community safety forums are funded by government, at a local level, by local government, out of its own budget, then at least they are sustainable. The current challenge is that, they depend on the police to fund. And because they engage well with the police, where you've got vigorous communities, the police sometimes do not find it, sort of incentivized on their part, for want of a better expression, to engage with the community. So they don't, they have an incentive to not ensure that the community safety forum works very well. So that gap has been picked up to say, because they are not sustainable now financially, it should be much better if they are funded directly by government at its various levels, and then they are sustained in that way. So they have some measure of autonomy, for want of a better expression, because they are there for the security of the budget. So that is what is anticipated, and I think those are the discussions that the Department of Safety and Security is having with the various authorities. With respect to whether we go the inquisitorial system and the adversarial system, either has advantages, and I think the tradition in South African law is that we use an adversarial system. that is highly dependent on the on litigants to say you are represented, so you should be able to make your own case. That issue, sir, has arisen in a matter currently of the state versus Paswani. It involves children, who they're accused. The matter has been referred to the High Court for sentencing. But one of the issues that are arisen in that case is the manner in which the police and the various departments in the class have dealt with the victim. The victims were children in that case, sexual case, rape, and so forth. And therefore, if therefore the judge finds that there were serious problems in the manner in which the case was dealt with, one of the options available is to refer that matter back to the regional court for leading of fresh evidence. Now, the constitutional question that has arisen is that do not undermine the rights of the child in terms of the constitution in cases like that where you require the child to come back again and give the same evidence in a matter that is already difficult. That's one thing. The other one is to say, where evidence has been led in an in an adversarial system, to what extent would an inquisitorial system again be unconstitutional if it were introduced, or to what extent would it be enhancing the rights of the child if it were introduced, in the sense that if it is introduced, the judicial officer can assist the child giving evidence in a matter to greater enhance the rights of the child. So those are the issues that are taking place. Some of the submissions that I've seen have erred on the side that we shouldn't change the tradition of the system, the adversarial system. We shouldn't change it. We should keep the adversarial system. So really the question is whether or not introducing an inquisitorial system would be a material change to the South African legal system. There's no definitive answer to that. There are different opinions. I think my one, at a personal level, share, is to say, whatever enhances the enforcement of rights and whatever really ensures that we were able to get the outcomes and that justice is served, it may be a better system. We have seen snippets of an inquisitorial system where, in certain cases, judges and magistrates, as you said, have entered the arena to try and assist either the prosecution or the defendant who is an unrepresented person or any of the parties where a child is involved. So we have seen already a little bit of inquisitorial system in our system. So there's a bit of a hybrid. But still, by and large, there is the issue of still the lives of the adversarial system. The challenge with that is raises two principles: judicial activism, because to what extent will an inquisitorial system encourage judicial activism, where judicial officers enter the arena, where they can even start pronouncing on extensive policy matters, vis-à-vis judicial restraint. So the adversarial system encourages at least at some level judicial restraint, where judicial officers restrain themselves and really watch the parties at play, as it were. But if we were to argue for a change and argue for judicial, for an inquisitorial system, it may be helpful to a certain extent, but you may begin to encourage judicial activism. And what challenges does that in itself bring? So at this stage, it's something that I'm not aware whether the profession is engaging or the judiciary is engaging with very strongly. Largely, it appears that discretion is left pretty much to each individual judicial officer to exercise, depending on the circumstances of the case. The conviction rate is an average one. It's a conviction rate of the cases that do run for trial. The ones that never make it to trial, of the 1,055,000 that I mentioned, at least 720,000 never even get that far. So the 86% conviction rate is on the difference, is on the 300,000 or so that do make it. So the majority of our cases don't make it to trial stage. They get withdrawn or they get struck off and that type of thing. And the challenge is how do you change that so that you have the majority of your cases getting caught? If you have a high conviction rate of 86%, it would be better if you are convicting at an 86% two-thirds of your cases. Currently, we're withdrawing and sucking off two-thirds of the cases. It's only a third where you get 86% conviction rate. So the challenge is in cluster coordination, how do you turn that around? And part of the review of the criminal justice system that honorable members may have been reading about in the paper is designed to strengthen those coordination mechanisms so that we can change those things around. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, cool. Yeah, that was cool. Leon?
Chairperson, when we start, I got a lot of questions. But after all, what I hear, I don't have any questions.
Okay.
Except to say, we must meet the public works somewhere, somehow.
I prefer to use your bullet for a dead donkey. By all means, let's go for it. You know, Leon, you've been in all our visits in all the provinces. Just I know that you've been consistently attending all the provincial visits. You know, what did DG say? We've been getting that, whether you remember, in all the provinces. You complain about this building, the finger would be... How would it work? Hey. That's why these days, when we go as a committee to do oversight in provinces, we make sure public works is with us in those visits. Hey, Chief, I don't know. Maybe let's wait until he does come back, maybe. No. Let me ask these questions, DG. This one says you are not going to respond to them today here. Yeah, because you've been so good to us. You're shy, you know. I'm even jealous. You're shy in there. This one, you take them along as a umphako. Then you send them in writing. I want us to attend this meeting now, even though they're bringing food at 5, because I'm trying to make up for a 2 days mess. But they will see how far we can go. No, I also want to appreciate the job well done, DG, and your department. That's very good. You know, what impressed me, I had some questions about the qualified report that the department is getting for these consecutive years. But I'm happy that you have put some measures in place to try and address that. I'll be glad if really we can and take it further as to measures that we're going to put in place so that we don't get this. And I'm happy that we have moved on this one. Even these vacancies in your offices in provinces. Yeah, I know you're going to address them, but if we can completely just get a sense, the progression would do you think when can we see these vacancies being filled? Because your officials wherever we go, they're competing with these vacancies. Now, these non-performing officials, what do you do with them? Those who have reached the ceiling, they're not trainable, they can't move. When you there are wheelbarrows, you push them. When you put the wheelbarrow down, they stop, they can't move. These dead wood, what do you do with them? I don't have any view, but just to get from you, these dead wood, what can we do about them? So that that's those little who are no more trainable. You can do whatever you can, they just reach the ceiling. I've dealt with the infrastructure. You know, some of these your buildings in some areas, they are old, as you said, were grey, and some of them they need total revamp. Some are not maintained regularly. We know that there is a limited allocation where as a department you can spend some money in doing some other things. But if it exceeds a particular amount, you can't do them. You rely, as you said, on public works. Same question. I know I'm. It's like a record, a real data. An illness crash. I don't know what can we do. If I had to ask the department, how can we intervene in trying to assist them? Because, as I said, wherever we go, it's the same complaint. In one of your offices in Virginia, in the Free State, is it Virginia? Where that the magistrate said, we've been waiting for public works to put a globe in the magistrate's office. We've been waiting for 3 months. A meat loop. And we were with Miss magistrate, was this Magula, senior, I don't know how you call him, the Latin Confession guy. Yeah, my regional head, yes, Magula. So he was so embarrassed when they raised this thing in his presence. That was, I'm just giving one example there. But lucky enough, before we left the province, that particular Friday, that loop was there and was fixed. The question is, I don't know how can we intervene as a committee or as this parliament, as this oversight practitioner, to departments that are frustrating you. Because you have these dedicated magistrates and prosecutors who are so ready to deliver service to the people. But the conditions in which they are working, like for example, go to Northwest, is it Masking or Chavano Mabatu? What is it? Where we get that there was no air conditioning there? Yeah. Is it Mabatu or is it Chavan? Yeah. Same complaint. Said, no, we have placed orders. Hardly was promised to come to us. It's almost 2 years now. The building is as is. That's what we were complaining about. We were saying. Maybe we should call our colleagues, our committee in Public Service Committee that is playing direct oversight of public works. Committee chaired by Honorable Tao. Let's have a joint meeting so that we plan a program, we will go out with that committee. So that we go to these offices. So when that committee go to do their visits, they go to these EPWPs, they go to look for bridges and whatever. I think where it matters most is in the building section, where departments are complaining. But Department DG, Correctional Services, SAPS, even Defense, all of them are complaining about the same department. I just don't know what we need to do. Maybe we advise them accordingly. Well done, DG, about the video postponement project. If 4,899 remands were concluded in 12 months, that's a very good one. That just saves the department, the state some money by just transporting people to go there just for postponement and come back. You know? That's like the... Yeah, I've been... This is progressive, man. Now I'm serving in the JSC, Judicial Service Commission. Always when we're meeting in April and October, as you know, only. But whenever we make appointments, there are few women judges, female judges. Now I'm looking at the South African women, what do you call them? The SAWA. South African Women Association. I don't know how can we do to motivate our female colleagues to join this department. There are very few. They're not even there. You know, JP Mwepe said, I've tried even to organize some workshop where I train them, whatever, but those who come there are very few. The number that you want, we can't reach it. And those who come there, some of them, they're not up to it that much. I don't know if you have DG, what can we do to attract women to come to the party? I don't know what else can we do. Because you go to some conferences, they complain, hey, women are not appointed, whatever. We even confronted JC Morok to say, no, you are complaining, what are you doing, Wena, to motivate people to come in? We even said to her, no, Wena, come and join us. Why can't you just come and join us? She refused. Now, it's a serious challenge. I don't know what can we do, really. I know it's not your fault as a department, but I think we can... I don't know what can we do to motivate them. Yeah, Honorable Ntuli, I thought you'll raise this today. You were quiet about it. The traditional court. No, there are some workshops or whatever. DG, can we be told how far are we? And Jing and course, you know, I took it as an interest on this one. Yeah, how are we empowering them? And
now, the last one, on the maintenance methods. You know, I'm so pleased to see the sets here and the kind of the how we have moved on page 24 about this maintenance methods. It's so cool to see the sets here. But the question is, what happens to those who are, at some point, they discover that they are supporting kids that are not theirs when they go for DNA tests? What happens to those kind of cases? Are people paid back their monies, or just that, no, lunyo yi inja, sanandava? What happened was, I know some cases where, I know even one prominent figure who was paying for more than 12 years, but was discovered that, no, when they go for this paternity test, it was discovered that, no, that the child is not his. They went for the second time to test again, because they wanted to be sure, to prove that, no, it was not even nearer to the percentage required. But 0000 was excluded as a fact. Now he said, no, I must just get my money back. Because he has been paying 3,000 every month. But the question is, I don't. The thing was, those kind of cases to have them, because I know in this set, in this slide, he don't say anything about women. Yeah. No, those were the few questions that I think you can take them along. But if you feel there's one specific question that you think you want to clear it now, you can do that. But you're not obliged. As I said, you can take them along. But if there's one question that you feel, no, I can't leave this room before I respond to it, let me respond to it, you can do it. Colleagues, is there any other question that might not be responded to today? They will be sent in writing.
Your last question in paternity, a test. Chairperson, I've seen a worse scenario, if you've probably come to that, where a test was conducted. It was negative from a child to mother, negative from a child to father. Where the mother was infuriated and said, how dare that the test could say, this is not my child. Whose child is it? Now, if probably we can get into the authenticity of the tests that are being done, whether there's any fault or there's likely any fault that could be detected there, because I don't see a person that would go there, because the first thing they do if you deny is test. And if test comes back and says negative, then you don't pay. But if it comes back, say positive, it's something else. But I've seen that scenario where it was negative both sides. And the case was represented by an attorney. We sat in the office, we looked at each other, we looked at the mother who was actually sharing tears.
They were changed in hospital. Okay, yeah, that's a possibility. Maybe she can address us on this. Okay, yeah, the last one will be Honorable Fielding.
Chairperson, there's something regarding about the waiting trial persons don't have money to pay bail and so forth and so on, that we see all over all nine provinces, day by day. A lot of people at the correctional services, and what the correctional services say refers to justice. He said, justice, we must take account to the people who are waiting.
Oh, that's the Criminal Procedure Act and the Correctional Services Act, the diversions and community service and stuff, and those diversions. The allegation that our magistrates are not keen to make use of that particular provision. Yeah, and some other stuff. And diversion stuff. Yeah, on that note, at the end, from our side, I will request the Honorable Leroux to send the DG and the team on our behalf. But for now, I will request the DG to choose which one wants to respond now, but the rest take them along. Then after responding, there may be a passing shot because we'll be adjourning now. I don't want to keep you long. You've been so good to us. Over to you, DG.
If I may respond to the one about awaiting trial detainees. From April this year, we've been running a program with the Department of Correctional Services to use Section 63 to have bail conditions changed and in some cases people released where the judiciary feels that there are justifiable circumstances. We're targeting specifically 10,000 awaiting trial detainees who have been given bail up to 2,500 rand. So we're looking only at those. At the end of September, we had managed to cause at least up to 4,000 just over 4,000 to be released between April and end of September using Section 63. We don't do it, Correctional Services does it, but we push it as a department from the cluster perspective to say you need to do this, and we encourage, as you know, heads of prisons to be the ones to be applying, so they do it quite often. We work together in preparing what type of affidavit, just to help them be confident to raise the issue with the judiciary. The legislature in many cases are very supportive, and as you can see, the results show for themselves. We're hoping that by end of the calendar year, those 10,000, could actually be released with fresh bail conditions. But there is an issue to say we need to also show that if people are released because there's a change in bail conditions, they will be managed while they're outside and they'll come back to their trial should that happen. So, Correctional Services is working on a program to bring in more people that can look at them while they are on supervision outside of the facility while they're students. So that program is running very well, and we think it's actually one of the much better programs. And what it does, it supports greater use of diversion as a system. Because really, to have 4,000, just over 4,000 released in such a short space of time, and many applications are still pending. The only jurisdiction where we're having the fewest approvals is Gauteng. For some reason, Gauteng has the fewest approvals of these applications. We found that the majority of applications take long time to be approved, but there's a higher percentage of those turned down than those approved. So we are hoping to engage with magistrates there on an ongoing basis. Thank you.
And maybe a passing shot, DG, before we close the agenda meeting.
Ours is just on behalf of the department, to thank the select committee and the honorable members for the questions. We always hope that we won't cause the honorable members to be asking the same questions all the time. And unfortunately, the department is a huge one and a difficult one. It's hard to turn a ship like this, to go in a particular direction, especially when it's got a particular history of not having focus. We're trying to focus on what really should be our core business and what interventions we should make. On air conditioners, we can order them and place them, but we can't use them because they affect the wiring. So somebody else must come and do the wiring. So small things like that, we can do a lot if the honorable members can help us break some of those barriers in the other areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. Honorable Leroux.
Thank you, Chairperson. On behalf of the Select Committee, I really would like to thank the DJ for his very interesting presentation this afternoon. So, and especially the very honest and concise way in which you answered every single one of our questions. We really appreciate that, and we can see that the department does take us seriously. And once again, we thank you for a very interesting afternoon. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Ronald Leroux. I can't spoil it. Well said. Colleagues, we're meeting again tomorrow as the other class and ourselves to finalize one final teaser to tell us for 10 minutes only. We'll request our my coach, Ustrelo, during his time so that he allows us to continue. Mami and go ahead.
Chairperson, I was going to propose that the members must remain.
Oh, but we need Bri, you should go. She's organizing a Bri for all of us. Thanks a lot, Mnyanda. On that note, the meeting is adjourned. Thanks very much. Okay.